This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by FarmPaint.com.
It's Con Runner. Con Runner and Florent Giroux clear to the finish in the Louisiana Derby. Con Runner wins going away.
Larney gets the huge change. Polar River's still three quarters of a length away. Larney in front. It's Japan's Derby.
Also sponsored by Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, Double Diamond Farm, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainesway, Gulfstream Park, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, Kirkwood Stables, Lane's End, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, the New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, RacehorseDraft.com, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Sunrise Stallions, Tony's of Lexington, the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program, Washington Hay, and Woodbine Entertainment.
More Spirit confidently handled, gets a left-handed reminder now, and he's trying to get them. Here he comes. And More Spirit is progressing very nicely under Gary Stevens as he takes care of business with plenty left in the tank.
Creator of sudden breaking news. Creator's almost there. It's Ricardo Santana Jr. It's Creator to win the Arkansas Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, you know him. He's the pontiff of the Pick Four. Pope Jude, we are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, post-Kentucky Derby 142, and happy to have you in the saddle with us on this Saturday morning. We are going to look back on Derby 142 this morning. We will look ahead to Preakness 141 coming up in just 7 days, 10 hours, 12 minutes, and 46 seconds. You knew there was a new countdown out there somewhere.
I figured there must be. And if there was, you would find it. fantastic. Can't wait to get there. You know, me and Preakness, we go back a long ways. We have a wonderful relationship.
Yeah. This is an event that we have been involved with here on the network since 2008. It was our first Preakness broadcast. It's been a great relationship with Pimlico and the folks at the Maryland Jockey Club. It's always one of the more fun events to cover every single year.
Yeah, no question. It's a solid week of partying. and when Doug O'Neill is there, it multiplies it by, you know, the third power. It just goes crazy, right?
No. Not Doug.
No.
Never.
Never. Did you see all the guys at the Orioles game last night? Was it last night?
I did not, no.
I think it was last night or maybe the night before. My God, they had the whole barn out there and Doug throwing out the first pitch, and it was really cool. I was hoping we might be able to make an Orioles game. They actually are in town the first couple of nights.
Yeah, well, I think so. They play Seattle, right?
Yes.
I think is what my beautiful bride, Michelle, told me.
I see you've been checking.
No, I did not. Yeah, she kind of looked at the schedule to see if there was a way to make a game. It's always fun to do those kind of things, you know, if we have time when we're on the road. When you talk about what we're going to see here next Saturday, here's the Derby winner again, Nyquist. Doug O'Neill back in the same position he was in 2012 with I'll Have Another. It's the very same team with Redham Racing and with Mario Gutierrez, the jockey. What your thoughts, JT? Do we have an opportunity for a Triple Crown winner again this year after next Saturday?
Yeah, I think Nyquist is going to win the Preakness.
Seems like his race, right?
Well, when I pulled up the Brisnet past performances for the race and went over everything. Now, an interesting stat and something that our friend Marty McGee shared on Twitter earlier this week, and this may amaze you. I don't know if you saw this or not, but since 1960, only Summer Squall in 1990 and Prairie Bayou in 1993 have won the Preakness after being second in the Derby. That's
wow.
That's over 50 years, and only two runner-ups have won the Preakness in 50 years, right? So, you know, when you look at this race and you see Nyquist, and then you look at Exaggerator, who's arguably, you know, the second best horse that's going to run, then after that you're getting down to like Collected and Uncle Lino, and, you know, I mean, maybe cherry wine.
Yeah, and
but
really,
fresh horses don't run well.
They do not fare well. No, and you know why? Here's my belief on that, is that you have the top three-year-olds throughout the entire year coming from all over the country to compete in the Kentucky Derby, right? Those are the best 20, in theory, the best 20 three-year-olds that we have in the game, right? So now you bring in horses that are newcomers, fresh horses, as they call them, to the Preakness. Those weren't the best 20. They weren't good enough to make it to the Kentucky Derby, right? Now, there are other circumstances involved. You know, some horses are more late developing than others. Maybe they weren't on the Derby trail. They were pointing for the Preakness all along. But even so, you're talking about the Derby attracting the best 20 horses, the best 23-year-olds in the sport. I think that's a big reason that you don't see the newcomers fare well, because when the Derby horses come back, these are the best. This is the cream of the crop.
Yeah, plus they're running back in 2 weeks, which is what horses were meant to do.
Yeah. Well, there's the other theory, too.
You know, I don't know. It's really interesting, but I thought when I looked at the PPs, I go, well, this is amazing, because Nyquist, he kind of stands out like a sore thumb in this race, you know? And all the, you know, can he go that far baloney has been answered. This race is even shorter.
Right.
Right? I mean, I don't know.
Interesting you say running back in 2 weeks. I'm going to hit you up with a little trivia here, and I'm not really expecting you to know the answer, but you might get it right off the bat. The last horse to win the Preakness after not competing in the Kentucky Derby was?
And
it's a little bit tricky.
Bernardini?
No.
No?
Rachel Alexandra in 2009. But remember, she ran 2 weeks prior, when she dominated the Kentucky Oaks. So you had that recency angle with her, and plus she was just an absolute freak.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that Preakness. So, yeah, it's you know, it's good to run back quickly, I think. And these horses are seasoned, like you say, and they're the best ones. So, but I thought that was really interesting about the Derby runner-up.
It's a great stat.
You know, that's crazy. That's 56 years.
Yeah.
That's almost like my entire lifetime.
Almost.
Almost.
Not quite.
Not quite, but almost. So
I'll get to that point someday.
Here. Yeah.
It's coming.
You're well on your way.
I'm edging ever closer, as we like to say.
But, my brother Bob, he was 54 this week, May 11th, and I said to him, I said, well, the only worst thing than being 54 is not being 54.
So, yeah.
And he agreed.
So, all right. So in terms of Nyquist, now he's going to be the favorite next week, right? There's no doubt about that. 72 favorites have won in the previous 140 runnings of the Preakness Stakes. That's a 51% clip. That is virtually unheard of in thoroughbred racing. Very formful race.
Yeah, very formful race. Another interesting thing that was on Twitter this morning, since they've started the point system, favorites in the Kentucky Derby are 4-for-4.
That's true. Four consecutive years.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
So that's a good way of picking the winner, I guess.
Just pick the favorite every time?
Yeah.
You're not going to make any money.
Well, but it's not about making money, is it?
Oh, yeah. I don't typically do that anyways when I go to the windows, but
it's a Kentucky Derby, you know? It's like, nice to have the winner of the Kentucky Derby.
Think about what Nyquist has already done and the so-called jinxes that he has broken. Right, you had the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Jinx, which Street Sense put an end to that back in 2007, but he was the only juvenile winner to go on and win the Kentucky Derby. Nyquist now number two. He became the eighth undefeated horse to win the Kentucky Derby and the first to accomplish that feat since Big Brown in 2008, the first undefeated juvenile champion to win the Kentucky Derby since Seattle Slough in 1977, and as you just mentioned, the fourth consecutive favorite to win the Kentucky Derby. So he's put himself into some lofty company with that victory last Saturday.
Yeah, and he absolutely, well, I don't want to use that word, but he urinated on the dosage system.
Yeah, forget about that. Uncle Mo can't go that far. Forestry Mare can't get a mile and a quarter. Now, a mile and a half, might be a little different story, but let's get past the Preakness first.
Yeah, well,
let's get past the Preakness.
If we're calling that a formality, then all we got to do is get them ready to run a mile and a half.
I don't know if it's a formality. Right? I mean, there is no such thing as a formality in horse racing.
No,
right?
The only locks are in the deli. We know this.
Yes, correct. A lot of things can happen.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. But on paper, as I like to say, and we all know they don't run them on paper, but on paper, he looks pretty formidable.
He does.
Yes.
He does. We'll have that coverage for you coming up next Saturday. We'll also have the Black-Eyed Susan on Friday. You will hear the Preakness undercard with us on Saturday afternoon, all leading up to our exclusive coverage of Preakness 141 in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. You can go to our website right now to check out a complete Preakness Week schedule. We're also going to bring you coverage of the Preakness post-position draw on Wednesday evening. Now, that coverage kicking off at 5 o'clock, presented by the Maryland Thoroughbred Breeders Association. Prior to that show, we're going to have a special one-hour show exploring the Maryland Thoroughbred industry, and you're going to hear from folks like Hunter Rankin, who is the president of Sagamore Farm. You're going to hear from him. You'll hear from several other people that are involved with Maryland racing, and we'll tell you why it really is a great place to breed and to raise horses and to compete each and every week. And all that coverage kicking off next week on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Looking forward to that.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Be a fun week.
Sagamore, quite the operation. They've really done a great job rejuvenating Sagamore Farm and Maryland Racing.
Right, as we continue to look back on the Kentucky Derby from last weekend, we'll come back after this next break, and you are going to hear a clip from this week's Trainer Talk show that is up there on our website now at horseracingradio.net. We had a chance to visit with assistant trainer Leandro Mora, who is a long time part of Team O'Neill. You'll hear from Leandro coming up after this break. You'll also hear the post-race interview that Tom Leach conducted on our Derby broadcast with runner-up Kent DeSormo as he talks about the trip that he had with Exaggerator. You're going to hear from NBC track announcer Larry Colmus at 8:35 Eastern. You'll hear from Tim Ripvo from the Stronach Group, the chief operating officer. He, of course, will talk about the Preakness, and he will talk about that $12 million horse race coming up in January at Gulfstream Park that was announced this past week. Don Little Jr. sends out Unified in this afternoon's Peter Pan at Belmont. He's going to be with us right around 9:25 Eastern time, and then JT and I will take you right up until 10 o'clock right here on the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Adina Spring Stallion Point of Entry, a five-time Grade 1 winner viewed by many to be the heir to Dinah Former's global legacy, with first crop weanlings already realizing six-figure sums at both Keeneland and Tattersall's in Newmarket. As a racehorse, Point of Entry was a truly great American turf horse, becoming the first since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined 9 lengths.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by 4 lengths. A Hall of Fame ride it was. Point of Entry wins the Sword Dancer, and they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
Point of Entry returned the following year to win the Grade 1 Gulfstream Park Turf and Grade 1 Manhattan, and also displayed the ability and the pedigree to perform at the highest level on dirt. Point of Entry, standing at Adina Springs in Paris, Kentucky. Visit adinastallions.com.
A multiple graded stakes winner and earner of more than $1 million. AlterNation reeled off 4 consecutive stakes victories.
AlterNation just far too much class for this field.
AlterNation running a powerful race here.
Cannot match stride with AlterNation.
And it's a photo AlterNation.
Great breeding from a family of successful sires, grand appearance, and brilliance on the racetrack. AlterNation at Pin Oak Stud.
Here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what would be a common misunderstanding between an insured and the insurance company?
Mike, one issue is a policy condition that requires notification when an insured animal becomes sick or injured.
Do you mean in life-threatening situations?
Not just then, but if a veterinarian is called in for treatment other than routine care. Take, for example, if a yearling colt gets his foreleg caught in a fence and tears the skin. The coat is stitched up and everything seems fine, but later the coat develops a systemic infection. Then there is a serious situation that the company knows nothing about.
So the company needs to know, even if it's not a life-threatening situation.
That's right. It's a policy condition. The company has a stake in the health of the animal because of the existing insurance policy. The company might want to have its own vet examine the horse. In most cases, though, just a call or email is all that is needed.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Power.
To honor and serve is the real deal here.
Passion.
To honor and serve is the winner of the Cigar Mile.
Performance.
To honor and serve would not let Mucho Macho Man buy.
Gainesway Stallion to honor and serve. Bernardini's Grade 1 Millionaire and Top 10 Yearling Sire with his first crop in 2015. To honor and serve yearlings included $450,000 and $220,000 colts at Phasic Tipton Saratoga and the session-topping $300,000 filly at the Phasic Tipton New York bred sale in August. Keeneland September yearlings by To Honor and Serve were topped by $250,000, $195,000, and $160,000 colts and a $150,000 filly. To Honor and Serve is Bernardini's only multiple graded stakes winner at 2, 3, and 4, defeating Breeders' Cup Classic winner Mucho Macho Man three times in four meetings, all in graded stakes. To Honor and Serve, standing at Gainesway.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Man, it's incredible. It's amazing what a horse can do. Just getting here, I feel like a winner. And Mario didn't give Mike Smith an easy lead. He kind of pushed him and made Mike have to really work that second quarter, and that really paid off. These horses are amazing. I'm so privileged to be able to be part of serving them, and that's what we're here for, and it's just an unbelievable feeling.
Trainer Doug O'Neill with our Jute Feld right after winning the Kentucky Derby last Saturday. And JT, you had the privilege of watching the race with Doug in his box. So the minute the horse crossed the finish line, we were able to come to you. You got that interview with Doug, and it was absolutely amazing. And take it a step further, the relationship that you have with Doug, which everybody who tunes into the program is well aware that you were the one who provided him with his first job on the racetrack. It really is a special relationship, and it had to be special for you to sit there and watch it.
Yeah, no, it was really a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't get to do that every week or every year or even once in a lifetime. But, you know, it is an amazing story, and how Doug, you know, came to me when he was in high school and wanted to be a trainer, and where he's gone from there. And you know, that was my question. Did you ever think that you would win two Kentucky Derbies? I mean, you know, everybody that trains horses or grows up in our game, you know, wants to win the Derby. I mean, that's a given. And then to win it twice is incredible. I mean, and you know, hats off to guys like Baffert and Lucas, you know. But I mean, it's an amazing story. I mean, here's a guy that's grown up in Santa Monica, and, you know, he's not from a horse family. He's not from a horse farm. He's not from...
Born in Michigan.
Yeah, born in Michigan, grew up in Santa Monica, and here he shows up at Jute Feld Racing Stable, you know, all 18 head of horses, headed to Del Mar soon, and, you know, and then now he's a multiple Kentucky Derby winning trainer, and just an outstanding person. I mean, just great guy, great sense of humor, very caring, giving, supportive individual. So, you know, lots of nice things about Doug.
Yeah, well, this past week, you and I had the opportunity to visit with his longtime assistant, Leandro Mora, on our Trainer Talk show, which you can hear every single Wednesday night from 6 to 7 Eastern on Sirius 220 XM 206. That show presented by our friends at Phasic Tipton. The podcast is available right now at horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the full hour, but we wanted to bring you Leandro's take on what it was like to be at the Derby and to watch Nyquist come through the stretch, and that's how we started this interview.
First of all, when I saw the first 22:45, I was looking to somebody next to me to say, we're done. Going a mile and a quarter, seeing those fractions, three-year-olds. The first three, four horses, they're pretty much die. And then when he went to the top of the stretch and passed another horse, oh boy, I started to melt and start screaming. And so that was it. Also, when the Exaggerator was coming, trying to catch up, I said, oh no, where's the wire? But it looks like on the gallop out, after that, we just stay as he was. That means we still had a little bit left on.
Leandro, what's it like making that walk over to the paddock area from the barn area?
If, thank God, my heart was pumping real good and a couple of drinks of red wine. Otherwise, your legs melt, to be honest. Yeah, that's the best walk you ever had. You mean you just compare it? Cannot compare it. It's like, let's say, oh my God, I don't know how to compare it. Let's say you just like the next president, whoever becomes, and they're going to do this first walk away. That's the feeling of it.
How about my old Kentucky home? Was that emotional when they played that?
It make you cry. It make you cry. And then they started out when we were, like, I think it was the second horse when they started out. And when we come up with the 13, it was just about ending. Oh, my God. You know, the skin turns in like a chicken. The hair goes up. It's an unbelievable feeling.
What was Nyquist like as a young horse when you first gotten him?
You know, when he come up, now I got to come up and say something. He come up to the barn, and we were told by Dennis, and Dennis says, I pay this amount of money, and this horse will leave me. He says, this is a good horse to have. I look at him, and once he stepped into the barn, he rolled, looked at us, and he was playing like he's been there forever. And once you see a smart horse, you just cannot change it. You know, one horse just like him who got hurt too soon was Stevie Wonder Boy. When he walked into the stall, you immediately know what you have. Okay, that horse was working ordinary works, was galloping ordinary gallops. I walked into the starting gate to start teaching him, and I told Mike Sherlock, I said, Mike, this horse is going to give you guys your Delmar money, your Delmar expenses, your Delmar rent. How do you know? Believe me, no expectations, was not working fast, no nothing. When the horse won in Delmar, Mike wanted to kill Jack Sisterson. Damn, Mario, Leandro gave me the horse, and you told me it was not that good. So on that one, I was right, because that horse, I mean, he's like a car. You step on the paddle, he goes 10 miles or 6 if you want him to do. But he's not the type of horse that he wants to go, run off, or jump here and there. Nothing like that. It's unbelievable. Believe me, that's out of the ordinary. There's not much to do in there and changes.
When you were watching the Kentucky Derby, when did you know you had it won?
God, when he went by that horse, I think it was a quarter pole, and he was gone. And when I saw Mario looking back, I said, we are winning. Because Mario did not press yet. He did not push it. He was looking to see if anybody's coming close. Mario is starting to be, he doesn't like to beat up horses. You've seen Mario ride all the time, and you don't see the Mario that one of those severe jackets who go all the way until the horse drop. The Mario does this very, very smart thing when he has a horse. If he thinks he's got a lot of horse and knows nobody's catching up, he doesn't try as much to kill the horse, to do whatever he has to. So that when I saw Mario looking back, I said, we're gone.
Mora, a longtime assistant to Doug O'Neill, talking about that Derby experience. He talks about Mario Gutierrez having something left with Nyquist at the end. He talked about that on a couple of occasions during that soundbite. Jude, you said the same thing. You said it looked like he was saving something for the next race, meaning the Preakness Stakes coming up next week.
Yeah, I thought so. You know, I've followed, of course, the Derby on social media this week, and, you know, there's detractors from that. But it doesn't really matter. I know what I saw, and he pretty much...
Detractors from what?
Of a lot of people said, oh, he was all out, exaggerator was getting to him, you know, the usual naysayers, which this poor horse, I don't know what you have to do. I don't know how many races you have to win.
Yeah.
You know.
Eight in a row, juvenile champion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, overcame a ridiculous amount of trouble in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile to win. You know, he's done everything right, and yet people are still down on him. It's almost embarrassing, you know. Even if you thought it, do you have to put it on Twitter? You know,
yeah. But don't you think that that's the minority, though? Right? Well, I mean, I know we talked about this going into the Derby. What more does a horse have to do?
Obviously, the horse was 2-1 favorite in a 20-horse field.
Right. So most people, believe.
I don't think people really grasp what that means, right? I mean, everybody's used to betting on 2-1 shots, mm-hmm. you know, and usually you're betting on them in a 6-horse field. If you're betting a 2-1 shot in a 20-horse field, that horse is an overwhelming favorite. He's an overwhelming favorite.
Yeah. The amount of money
yeah.
that it takes to make that horse 2-1 in a 20-horse field.
Right, right. And so, you know, I think that you know, Nyquist does have a lot of fans, but obviously the detractors are making the most noise. And so, you know, but to me, he looked like, you know, he looked back, he saw where he was, he felt like he had plenty to get to the wire. He didn't, you know, beat the horse up. He's not a noted whip rider
right.
anyway.
Right.
You know, I thought the horse had a relatively easy go of it the last, you know,
yeah, and
100
from all
yards
accounts
or whatever
that we're hearing so far, has bounced out of the race just fine.
Yeah, I mean,
he shipped to Pimlico early. He was there this past Monday, the first Preakness horse to arrive on the grounds. Plenty of time to get acclimated, and looks really good in the mornings from all the video that we're seeing coming in.
Yeah, and they moved his training up a day, which I thought was a really good sign.
Mm-hmm.
So he must have been bouncing off the walls for them to send him out a day early to jog, you know. And they're not going to breeze him, which is something that I love. It's not necessary.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, all systems go.
Well, of course, you can hear that entire one-hour interview with Leandro Mora on our website now. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, every single Wednesday night here on the network. All of our Trainer Talk shows are archived for you at horseracingradio.net. And keep in mind, Nyquist, also a graduate of the Fasic Tipton Florida sale. And that is the reason that they were able to run for that $1 million bonus in the Florida Derby. So all systems go for the champ right now as he heads to the Preakness Stakes. The runner-up was, of course, Exaggerator, as we mentioned. And right after the race, Tom Leach had a chance to catch up with rider Kent DeSormo.
Here with Kent DeSormo, who rode the runner-up Exaggerator. Kent, tell me about your trip. You were flying at the end.
I had a perfect trip until the 3/8 pole. I had to stop him cold. I mean, air brake like an 18-wheeler. I used Jake brakes at the 3.5, and I know it was a difference in two lengths. And I honestly, heartfeltly feel like if he makes it to the Preakness, that horse won't beat him.
You expect to go on to the Preakness?
I have no idea. Let him cool out. Let's see if he eats his food. And that's the trainer's thing. I just know that he was probably the best horse today.
What were you feeling under you as you were making the run?
A machine. I mean, he was flying. He leveled off a little bit at the 16th pole, but from the 2.5 to the 16th pole, he probably went sub 20, at least 24, that quarter inside there, and that's after traveling 6 furlongs. It's after traveling a mile. So,
you think you had him when you got free?
When I got free, I did. I think I had him, but Nyquist is the champion that he is. He went on enough. None of the rest of them could. And I had an altercation in the race, so.
Kent DeSormo, rider of the Tough Luck runner-up Exaggerator in Derby 142.
All right, Kent DeSormo, always very animated, great interview. And here he is talking about having to tap on the air brakes, as he said, and get stopped hard. When he got the horse running again, Exaggerator gave him that run, and he ends up about a length and a quarter short in that Derby run last week.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always a sad story after every race, and that happened to be Kent this time. I don't know, you know, what you make of that. And he did say that the horse, I thought, interestingly, the horse flattened out at the 16th pole. So I don't know how that all works. You know, you got to project it for yourself, I guess. But
I like the footnote about the Kentucky Derby. Have you seen that yet with Exaggerator?
No.
I've never seen this footnote before, but it says knifed through at the quarter pole.
Knifed
through. I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good description.
Yeah.
They don't make chart footnote riders like they used to.
That's when you were doing it.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
We had some very talented people.
Well, Exaggerator and Nyquist will get the rematch next Saturday. As we told you at the top of the show, we will have that coverage for you exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. You can go to our website for a complete listing of affiliates coast to coast. And, of course, you can listen on SiriusXM satellite radio and worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Listeners in well over 80 countries made Horse Racing Radio Network their home for Derby Week coverage. Make sure you do the same for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment. When we come back from this segment, we'll continue to look back on Derby 142. We'll do that with NBC announcer Larry Colmus. Stay with us. It is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The World Championship of Thoroughbred Racing was on the line at the lovely, majestic Longchamp Racecourse just outside Paris on October 3rd, 1965, when the most prestigious Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe was about to unfold. And what a star-studded fielder was on hand to contest it. Meadow Court from Ireland, Oncidium from England, Aniline from the Soviet Union, Ragazzo, Soderini, Diatomy, Reliance, Caliph, Marco Visconti, Francis Great Seabird, the Big Chestnut, Little Tom Rolfe from America, and Free Ride, who was an entry with Diatomy. A huge crowd had gathered at the glorious Longchamp Racecourse, which in all its splendor was among the aesthetically most beautiful in the world. It exuded class, and there was class aplenty on the racetrack to match it on this day. In the paddock, Seabird, the big local favorite, looked somewhat skittish and was sweating, as was Reliance, although it was a very warm day and the sun was beating down. Tom Rolfe, the American entry, was calm and created a stir among the crowd as he was ponied during the post-parade to the start. French racegoers had not been accustomed to that practice at their races. Oncidium, the English horse, was showing signs of nervousness. Aniline, the Russian entry, was very businesslike, calm, and quiet. At the starting post, Oncidium caused some problems, but the rest of the field lined up in perfect order. At the break, Marco Visconti went right to the front. Caliph picked up to chase, and Meadow Court and Aniline were up near the front as well. Seabird, with Australian Pat Glennon in the saddle, and Reliance, with a renowned Yves Saint-Martin up, were well-rated, in no difficulty, running fifth and sixth. They were obviously stalking the leaders, waiting for the right time to make that one big run. The going was on the soft side of Longchamp that day, and America's Tom Rolfe was showing definite signs of difficulty in handling it. He was far back and never really got into the hunt, so to speak. As the field rounded the bend and started for home at the top of the stretch, Glennon let loose on Seabird, and he chewed up huge pieces of turf with long, smooth strides until he veritably flew by the front quartet to assume command at the top of the straight to pull out to an open six-length lead. That incredible display of speed had shot him forward as though propelled by a rocket. Saint-Martin asked his Mount Reliance for a move at the same time Seabird moved, but there was no way he could stay with the flying French chestnut. Seabird maintained the margin to win by six open lengths over the previously unbeaten Reliance, and it was another five back to Diatomy, with Free Ride fourth and Aniline fifth. Seabird had turned in a phenomenal effort, totally dominating the other 19 horses in the field, and he was now to be compared with the famous Rebeau. After retirement from the racetrack, Seabird came to stand at stud in America for John W. Galbraith, and as a consequence, his legacy lives on in the world of American racing. That performance, October 3rd, 1965, at Longchamp in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, was indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Pin Oak Studs, Broken Vow, ranks among the top sires in North America every year. Runners by this outstanding son of Unbridled have earned nearly $54 million and won major stakes on all surfaces from coast to coast. Sought after in the sales ring and hard to catch on the track, Broken Vow consistently has success at the highest level. Broken Vow at Pin Oak Stud.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
What is it about Tony's Steaks and Seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair strips. FlairStrips.com.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
There's a quarter mile to go in the Kentucky Derby. They turn for home, and here's Nyquist. Champion Nyquist comes off the turn and takes the lead away from Gunrunner. It's these two clear by five. Mohamed's closing on the outside, and Exaggerator's flying down the center of the track by the Twin Spires in the Kentucky Derby. It's Nyquist clear by three. Gunrunner's running in second. Exaggerator continues to close. Time is running out. Nyquist is 100 yards from home. Exaggerator with one final try in the Derby. Nyquist holds on. He's undefeated, and he's won the 142nd Kentucky Derby. Exaggerator was second. Sudden breaking news, Mohamed and Gunrunner in a photo for third, fourth, and fifth.
Mike Penajude fell back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The voice of Churchill Downs, Travis Stone, with the call of Derby 142, and what an effort by Nyquist to get the victory that day. JT, that was a phenomenal performance. But as we've heard, there were a few others in attendance that may have had something to do with the call of the Kentucky Derby.
Yes.
Not just Travis.
Yeah, no, the voice of NBC.
Larry Comas?
The voice of the Kentucky Derby and the voice of the Breeders' Cup, as well as an old Hilltop Award winner.
Oh, yeah, right. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jude.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I read the terms of the contract.
Obviously, one of you did. You should read the contract on the air. I thought that was a pretty good email.
I thought that was
well thought out by me.
Very, very good. You obviously had a little bit of free time.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess I broke rule number three in the contract with the fact that it said no other race calls by other announcers may be played during the interview and or 5 minutes before or after my segment.
That's right. You've broken it already. It was immediate.
I was appalled. I was appalled, and I want you to know that Lee Della Pina had nothing to do with it.
No, this one's got kind of written all over it.
Oh, man. Well, look, Larry, this obviously you were there. You were part of the NBC broadcast team, as you have been for several years. You take a look at this performance by Nyquist, and at the end of your call, you were so animated about the final time and how impressive this effort really was. How good was this run by Nyquist?
I thought it was really good. I mean, you got to take the time into context because the track was pretty fast at Churchill. There's no doubt about that. but I believe it was the 12th fastest Kentucky Derby of all time, which, you know, out of the 142 runnings is pretty good. It's a couple of seconds faster than American Pharoah ran the year before, so something must be said for that. I mean, I just think that this horse, his credentials are so above and beyond what we've seen in recent years. I mean, the horse is never lost. I mean, and the one stat that I got that I thought was really cool, that there have only been four horses in the history of the Kentucky Derby that come out of the Derby undefeated and were named the two-year-old champion, and two of them were way back when, Regret and Morvich, and then Seattle Slew, and Al Nyquist. I mean, he's in an elite group there.
Yeah, there's no question about it, and he just seems to do everything effortlessly, which is what you look for, certainly, as we move forward into the Triple Crown.
Yeah, I mean, he makes it look easy, and I think that, you know, a lot of people have said that this might not be the strongest generation of three-year-olds, but you hear that every year. It's either, oh, it's so fantastic group, or it's just not a great group, but he's the best one. And there's just no doubt about that right now. It's just a matter of whether he can get through that Triple Crown, and I think it's kind of a good thing that he's been lightly raced coming up to it. So we'll see what happens this Saturday and in 3 weeks here at Belmont.
We just played a soundbite from Kent DeSormo in the previous segment, which is always interesting when you get a soundbite from Kent because he's so animated. But he talked about having to, as he put it, put on the air brakes with Exaggerator, where he pretty much got stopped cold at one point in the race and then had to get him going again. When I went back and watched the replay, I didn't see anything that looked that egregious in terms of Exaggerator's trip. How about you?
No, me neither. I mean, I looked at it a couple of times. In fact, Travis in his race call mentioned, you know, something about having trouble on the turn. Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of time where he had to wait for a bit and then go around, but I didn't see anything that was, you know, overly dramatic. But, you know, I wasn't on the horse. Kent was. I mean, he's either exaggerating about Exaggerator or something happened. You know, it's hard to tell when you're not in the heat of the moment down there on the track.
Yeah, and if you're calling the race, you got bigger fish to fry than worry about that. But it's one of those things where it might be a little from column A and a little from column B, but certainly right. Not like a Fleet Alex moment or something like that. I mean,
there just wasn't a whole lot that I saw there. I mean, I didn't see too many bad trips at all looking at the replay of the race. And certainly I don't think that anything that I saw live or on replay would have cost Exaggerator the race. I mean, Nyquist has beaten him four times now. I mean, how many times has he got to beat him?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the last 3/16ths. Kent said that Exaggerator flattened out about the 16th pole. But what did you see down the stretch as you're calling the race?
Well, he was finishing well. In fact, there was a slight hesitation for me with that 20-horse field and similar colors right around the 8th pole that I had to make sure that it was him because there were a few greens in that race, and I was pretty sure it was. But he was running okay, you know, down the stretch, and certainly was finishing better than everybody else. I mean, there wasn't anything overly dramatic about his run down the stretch that would lead me to believe that, you know, and you've seen this in the past, the horse that finished second in the Derby, oh, my God, this is the Preakness horse. This has got to be the one. I didn't see that. I mean, to me, it was Nyquist who was the most impressive. And one of the other reasons why was the fact that all of the horses that were up in that early battle with Nyquist in that race all just dropped way out of it and finished nowhere except for Gunrunner. He was okay. The rest of them were far, far back. And you know, the closers had that pace to make their run. Exaggerator was the only one that really was able to take advantage of that. But I still think that overall, if you look at the way the race shaped up and the way everything went, I think the best horse won, and the best horse was the most impressive one, too.
Did you think Mario saved a little bit at the end?
I couldn't really tell. You know, at the Kentucky Derby, you know, it seems like it's tough to do something like that. Certainly more than Victor Espinoza had the year before, because he really had to get all over American Pharoah to win the Kentucky Derby. you would think that that would be the case. And the other thing is Nyquist seems to do that himself. We saw that in the Florida Derby where he turned everything off when he took the lead and started switching leads back and forth. And people said, oh, this is a tired horse. And I think he was just looking for something to do. He was bored, looking for competition. Where'd everybody go? I think that he's legit. I think he'll be a heavy favorite in the Preakness, and deservedly so.
NBC's Larry Colmus with us on the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry, you have the privilege of calling so many of the sport's biggest races, not just the Triple Crown, but as Jude mentioned earlier, the Breeders' Cup. You call all the NYRA races. You're a Gulfstream for all the big races throughout the wintertime. When they go into the gate for the Kentucky Derby, are there still some butterflies in Larry Colmus's stomach that are welling up as you get ready to call that race?
Oh, yeah. For that race, there always will be. I don't think that'll ever go away. It sort of builds itself up. During the week, you have a little bit. You're always preparing and looking at all the silks and thinking about things that you want to say. And as it gets closer and closer, you start to get that feel like, oh, man, this is coming up. And then when they start playing My Old Kentucky Home, which I can listen to now, I wasn't able to listen to that in the past, but now I can without getting too fired up, the realization comes, okay, we're almost there. And as the horses approach the gate, you're sort of getting, I find myself getting sweaty palms and pacing back and forth and just kind of trying to calm myself down, but it's very difficult to do because there's just so much on the line for the next 2 minutes and a few seconds. Once those gates open, you're on your own and you're left with telling people what's going on. And luckily, the last couple of derbies haven't been that tough because there hasn't been a lot of dramatic runs. I haven't had to deal with, like, when Tom Durkin had that one year with Giacomo when he just came from nowhere at the very end and there were, like, six horses near the wire. That hasn't happened yet, so I'm not looking forward to that. Hopefully it won't. I like it the way it's been the last couple of years.
Did the two Benson horses race with separate colored caps, or did they have the same colors?
They had the same colors, which was unfortunate. I don't want to be mean about this, but we did ask whether they would do that, and they refused. The owners said that this is their uniform, this is how it's going to be. Luckily, one of the two horses had a set of white blinkers, and the other one didn't. But if the track gets muddy you can't always see that. So that, believe it or not, that makes things a whole lot more difficult for a race caller when that happens. And to be honest with you, I was rooting against them. And I'm glad their horses got beat, because if I had to guess to see which one it was, it would have not been much fun. And it's a shame that they couldn't do that for both me or Travis. But, hey, that's the way they wanted to do it, that's the way it was.
It used to be a rule of racing. I mean, the stewards would require that. But everything has changed, since I was a boy.
Now it is up to the owner to say yes or no, isn't it?
It is in Kentucky. We looked into that. The stewards were trying to help us too, because they understood. They wanted to be able to tell them apart. But there was no set rule that said that you had to put different colored caps on your horses. Usually that's been done in the past as a common courtesy. Last year it was done by Zayat Stable. We asked them if they could put a different cap color on Mr. Z, because originally they were going to have three horses in the Derby. El Kabir was scratched, right before. But if they were going to have three, even though El Kabir was gray and Mr. Z had blinkers, I talked to Justin Zayat and Ahmed Zayat, and I said, hey, could you do this for us? And they said, sure, no problem. And they did, and they won the Kentucky Derby. So there's such a thing called karma, I believe. So, you know what I'm saying.
You obviously have no interest in New Orleans Saints season tickets.
0-16.
Wow. Bitter party of one.
Yeah, if it was Robert Kraft who had the two horses in, he wouldn't be talking like this.
Oh, yeah, no. Absolutely not.
All right, so we talked about the Preakness being a much more relaxed race to cover, and quite frankly, it's one of the more fun events that we get to be part of all year long. Is it the same for you, Larry, as the announcer, a much more relaxed type of flow to that day and to that particular race?
You know what, it really is. The whole week is just way more relaxed. It's fun because there's always still a Triple Crown on the line, except for, you know, something happens to the Derby winner and they don't make it to Pimlico. So you always have that going for you. But on top of that, it's just, I mean, the Derby is the Derby, and it's just so huge and so, you know, pressure-filled. And it just, like, you turn it off just a little bit. There's still a lot of pressure on the Preakness, but you turn it down a notch. And everybody just seems to be having a little bit more fun there. And the other thing that I love about the Preakness is that the NBC compound where we are is right next to the stakes barn. So you can just walk over, you know, a quarter of a mile, and here are all the horses, and you get to talk to the connections and see the horses in advance where, you know, you're kind of farther away at Churchill or Belmont. So that intimacy is really cool, too. And there's just something, obviously, to me, too, being from there helps. Being born and raised in the Baltimore area, it's always nice to come back and see everybody, and that takes a little bit of an edge off, too. But, yeah, I love the Preakness.
And then the open bar after the race is in the barn area.
I don't know anything about that.
It's so much fun to hang out there with everybody and talk horses and be around the connections. And it's just a very unique experience. It's something that we don't get to enjoy at other racetracks. And there's nothing like the Preakness. It's fantastic.
My favorite part is getting to hear Dave Rodman's call every year.
Well,
yeah, we traditionally have Rodman on after the Preakness and get his thoughts and stuff before we sign off. And I don't know, with our schedule this year, it might be a little different, but it's always fun to get his impressions of it. He's called so many Preaknesses over the years, and he usually has a pretty good of opinion of what went on during the race. So it's
always
fun.
A good guy. We like Dave. I always look forward to seeing him when I get up there. We're not too far from each other the way we call the races. You know, I actually am out in the elements on the roof at Pimlico. It's the only one I call outside, and every once in a while it rains. So last year, I remember it might have rained just a little bit before the race.
just
a little. Larry Kolmus here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry, appreciate the time, my friend. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive another gift from Embrace the Race. It will have a value of at least $350, as you specified in your email to me yesterday. So we'll pass that on to Mike Dianzaris and let him know.
I'm sure Mike will be happy to accommodate.
Well, why wouldn't he? You're the announcer. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, Larry Kolmus, always a lot of fun to catch up with him. And that's one thing that I've always loved about Larry is that you can needle him, give him a hard time about, you know, other announcers and using their calls and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the guy's great. I mean, he is just, you know, obviously among the best in the game today, and always a lot of fun to get a chance to catch up with him.
Yeah, he's very, very entertaining, very smart guy, a great sense of humor. So can't beat that for a guest.
And an old Hilltop Award winner,
yes.
By the way.
Yeah, I mentioned that at the top of the introduction.
Right. All right, we're going to get to another break. We'll come back. We'll get you set for a very busy second half of the show as well. Stay with us on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan?
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you gotta be more than fast.
More than fast.
You gotta be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I've thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Amalabadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
Ed's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery.
Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince, the most expensive yearling from the great pioneer of the Nile's debut crop and a top-class juvenile, winning the Grade 2 Nashua before his memorable battle with Eclipse Champion Honor Code in the Remsen. At 3, Cairo Prince was simply sensational in the Grade 2 Holy Bull Stakes, making him the early book favorite for the Kentucky Derby.
Cairo Prince has run away! Cairo Prince and Luis Saez with an emphatic win in the Holy Bull!
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince. Think about it.
This is Tom Leach for Kentucky Bank's Wealth Management Department. Investing in today's world requires advice that is timely and responsive to your investment needs and objectives. At Kentucky Bank, we strive to provide you with our full range of investment services with the highest degree of service and to deliver it in a personalized and effective fashion. For a no-obligation review, call Clark Nyberg at 859-988-1318. That's Clark Nyberg, 859-988-1318. Call Kentucky Bank and call it home. I do.
A multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire sprinter.
It's going to be very close at the finish, and here's the wire. It's Palace, the winner.
The best son of leading sire City Zip.
And it will be Palace, the winner by 3/4 of a length. And Palace dazzles here and wins by 3.5 lengths.
Palace, new for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa, direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today. It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And Catherine Sophia will be very impressive, the winner of the Kentucky Oaks.
Catherine Sophia once again displayed her brilliance with a stellar victory in the Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks at Churchill Downs. Now 5-4-6 lifetime with nearly $1 million in earnings, Catherine Sophia's winning effort in the Oaks makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Boss, the fastest son of the Great Street Cry. His 15 black type horses in 2015 were more than all other stallions standing for under $20,000. In America, Street Boss is the sire of Grade 1 winners Capo Bastone, Danza, and Kentucky Oaks heroine Catherine Sophia, along with Grade 1 winner The Quarterback, who competes in Australia. To learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
To the top of the short stretch, collected once again, coming after one more round, a gap of six. Direct Message third, Swipe is in fourth, Riker fifth, Synchrony six, collected, coming past the eighth pole, has wrestled the lead away from one more round. A margin of seven more lengths then, back to Direct Message, Synchrony moves up third toward the inside, but well behind collected. Javier Castellano rallies collected past the leader in the stretch to win the Lexington Stakes.
Kurt Becker with the call of the Grade 3 Lexington at Keeneland. That was on April 16th. Collected, powering away from the field that afternoon, winning by four under jockey Javier Castellano. He is one of the expected newcomers in next weekend's Preakness Stakes, taking on Nyquist Exaggerator and a few others coming back from that Kentucky Derby. And Bob Baffert, the trainer of Collected, is a guy who knows how to win the Preakness. He has won it six times, tied with fellow Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas in that category. And we'll see if he can get number seven with Collected. Jude, as we mentioned at the top of the show, newcomers typically don't fare very well when they come to Baltimore. But, you know, hey, Collected's a very, very talented horse.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of an unsung horse for a horse that's won four out of six starts. And his race at Keeneland was very nice. I rather fancied him that day. He looked like He was the classiest horse in the race and proved it. Once again, he had a nice workout for the Preakness, and Baffert said he earned his way into the Preakness with that work. I just think, you know, he's one of the horses that could post an upset. He has 102 Brisnet speed figure, two races back in the race at Sunland Park, and 102 is the par for the Preakness on the Brisnet scale. So he's run a race that's competitive. You look at the other horses, Exaggerator's got a 103 out of the Derby, Nyquist a 104, and then Uncle Lino has this whopping 109 from Los Alamitos.
Yeah, that was his track record performance in the California Chrome.
Kind of interesting, though, that, I mean, he won by half a length, but the second-place finisher was five ahead of the third, but that wasn't a very talented field. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But speed figure-wise, Collected certainly fits with this group, and you got the Baffert factor of him winning the Preakness many times. So, some things to like about him.
All of our Preakness Week coverage begins Wednesday afternoon here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Make sure you join us for coverage of the Preakness Post Position Draw presented by the Maryland Thoroughbred Breeders. That broadcast will be preceded by a special Maryland Racing Showcase program, which will air from 4 to 5 Eastern on Wednesday afternoon, the post-draw coverage 5 to 6 Eastern, and then we'll take you through the Black-Eyed Susan on Friday. We'll bring you coverage of the Preakness Undercard and Preakness 141 in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. Make sure you check out a complete schedule at horseracingradio.net. Second half of the program coming up, we're going to be joined by Tim Ritvo, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Stronach Group. He will look ahead to the Preakness, and he will tell you about the world's richest horse race coming to Gulfstream Park in January of 2017. Don Little Jr. going to be with us at 9:25 Eastern Time to take a look at Unified, who goes postward in this afternoon's Peter Pan at Belmont. A lot still to come. We're back with hour two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together, and Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby!
Brody's Paws at the 16th pole, chased by Kerry Wine. My Man Sam running huge from last, but Brody's Paws in front. Brody's Paws for Luis Saez to win the Toyota Bluegrass.
And it's Mohamed, who has taken the lead on the outside. Mohamed to the front. Pulling away from Zulu Fellowship is third as Mo Heyman pulls away.
But Exaggerator is finishing with conviction this afternoon. Exaggerator, an absolutely brilliant victory in the Santa Anita Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum rolling on in a post-Kentucky Derby edition of the program. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, we are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, edging ever closer to the middle jewel of horse racing's Triple Crown. 7 days, 9 hours, 11 minutes, and 55 seconds away from Preakness 141.
Can't wait. Really looking forward to the Preakness.
Yeah, we told you in the first half of the program, it is one of the more exciting events and one of the more fun events that we get to be part of every single year here on the network. We have been the official radio partner of the Preakness Stakes since 2008 and looking forward to continuing that relationship here in 2016 and beyond. Going to be a great race. You're going to see the Derby winner Nyquist in a rematch with runner-up Exaggerator. Several newcomers coming to the table, including, as you just heard, Collected from the barn of Bob Baffert. You're going to have Uncle Lino, who was so dominant at Los Alamitos last time out. And a horse like Fellowship, who has been knocking on the door against some big names in the sport throughout the Triple Crown season, at least the run to the Derby season. You're going to hear from Fellowship from Mark Cassie as well. And JT, it's shaping up to be another great renewal of the Preakness Stakes.
Yeah, it's always fun and takes the pressure off from the Derby. The Derby's so highly charged and really kind of a pain to to go through, and then you get to Preakness, and it's party week. Nobody gives parties like Mr. Stronach, and we just have a blast the whole time we're there, and it's always a fun event. People really enjoy themselves when they go to the Preakness. Oftentimes people say, oh, you know, I got the Kentucky Derby on my bucket list, and I always push them to the Preakness. Yeah. I go, don't do that. Go to the Preakness. You'll have so much more fun. It's so cool. You will not believe how great it is.
If you missed any portion of the first half of the show, if you missed Leandro Mora talking about his Derby experience as an assistant to trainer Doug O'Neill, if you missed Kenta Sormo talking about his trip on Exaggerator, or if you missed that interview with Larry Colmus just a short time ago, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast of this show and all of our programs available for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, you talk about a party, and you said nobody throws a party like Frank Stronach. There is going to be one heck of a party at the end of January in 2017 at Gulfstream Park, because it was announced this past week that the Stronach Group will run a $12 million horse race, the world's richest horse race, the $12 million Pegasus Cup, January 28th at Gulfstream. Get your plane ticket now. Make sure you're there. We can't wait to be part of that event as well. And Tim Ritvo is the chief operating officer of the Stronach Group. He is with us now on the Equine Forum. And Tim, look, this news coming out this week was another bombshell that was put out there by the Stronach Group. And you've done so many good things for racing over the course of the past couple of seasons. And now here we go, the $12 million Pegasus World Cup.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate all you do for the industry. You know, as everybody knows, Mr. Stronach's an innovative thinker, and with the tradition still in mind. I mean, we strategically spent a lot of time on where to place this race. You know, obviously, the minute it was announced, I saw 300 or 400 blogs hit all over the place. And, you know, everyone has a different opinion on distance and the timing of the race. But I can tell you it was strategically thought out to not be effective to anything else that's traditionally run, Breeders' Cup, even the Dubai World Cup, an international race. We said, where does it fit? How does it make sense? And all of those things were taken into consideration from the team. So we're excited about it. Obviously, like anything, when the Breeders' Cup started the first year, I'm sure what it will look like this year compared to what it looks like 5 to 10 years from now, I think you'll see an improved product as we move on. But very exciting, a lot of people interested in it. And like I said, trying to position it as not to be disruptive, but to be an amenity to a great sport. I mean, the one thing that Mr. Stronach has that we have seen and proven over time is a real strong love for the game. So he's always thinking of new things, how to re-energize a new fan base, how do we draw people to the races on multiple event, big event days. So those are the things we're working on.
Well, this is not your ordinary $12 million horse race. There are some unique differences to the Pegasus World Cup. Take me through the details of how somebody gets involved with running a horse and then the benefits they're going to reap from being in the race.
Well, when you think about it, a lot of times, lots of owners go to the sales all the time and buy horses for $1 million, hoping to get into a big race and hoping to have a horse to run in that big race. And a lot of times, unfortunately, things don't turn out to be the way they want them to be, because if it was that easy, everybody that had money would do it. What we've structured here is you actually buy a spot in the gate. You become a partner in the event. So now, as like an NFL football team or something, there's only 12 teams. There's only 12 spots in the gate. You can buy a spot and freeze that spot in the gate. Hopefully have one of your own horses running it. But if you weren't fortunate enough to develop a horse that year, you can, one, lease that spot. You can, two, sell that spot. You can negotiate. And some of it came into tuition when Cappy had Mucho Macho Man. There was a lot of action around Dean saying, well, listen, if you don't want to go to Dubai, we could lease your horse for $2 million and take him to Dubai. And they run under our colors, and then we'll bring him back and give him to you. So we started to think, and Mr. Stronach put the concept on paper and said, you know what, this is really a good idea. And it makes everybody invested in it. So the power mutual handle, the sponsorship revenue, and any television revenue would all go into the bucket to be shared by the slot owners. And these slot owners, like I say, a lot of them will end up being thoroughbred owners themselves with the dream to get in a race like this. But in reality, they're investing in a leak, or they're investing in a series of races, hopefully down the road, that will expand. So, I mean, this is the beginning. This is what it looks like. And if you're one of the 12 investors that get in early, you will be guaranteed an opportunity to reinvest in the second leg, in the third leg, and you will be the first one in. So it's an attractive offer. People are digesting it. We have eight or nine pretty solid confirmations right now with lots and lots of phone calls out there after it was announced. It's been talked about a little bit. So, you know, there's people interested and they want to see. It's one of these things, though, if you wait too long, you might not get a slot. And, I mean, you know, you just don't know who's going to have a super horse by January 28th. I mean, horses evolve all the time. So if you don't own a slot, you actually can't get in the race unless you cut a deal with a guy that owns the slot. So that's kind of the intrigue to it. And, you know, once again, this is an innovative thinking. I mean, the track itself and Mr. Stronach itself will make no revenue other than who we drive to the park, how many people come out and stuff like that, obviously. But it's about a branding issue. And once again, trying to make Gulfstream Park great. Obviously, if we held a race like this at Santa Anita, it would be more efficient because of the building size and stuff like that. So we struggle with the building at Gulfstream being not as big or as efficient as any. But as time evolves, who knows where this thing goes next. So it's, you know, it gets started at Gulfstream. We have the beautiful statues of Pegasus, which Mr. Strong is very proud of, and we are very proud of, something that's monumental and another gift to the industry.
Well, you know, it's already, after a couple of days, it's kind of changed some things around. The placement is brilliant because it's almost perfectly centered between the Breeders' Cup and the Dubai World Cup, so that's a great placement for this race. But I noticed this morning Art Sherman saying that California Chrome could race again next year, and I have a feeling that's because you guys put up this race. So there's going to be people thinking about it even in January. It's another great situation because even if a horse is going to go to stud, it could be their final start before they go to stud. They've still got plenty of time to get ready for the breeding shed after that. So it's a really brilliant idea, and it's going to be interesting to see what shakes out when the spots are available and who's going to want them and what they go for.
Yeah, let me take this angle with you here, Timmy, for just a minute. Let me play devil's advocate. What happens if for some reason you don't have all 12 slots filled and you end up with 10 or 11?
Yeah, it's a $12 million purse. So Mr. Stronach has said that he'll guarantee the minimum coverage. He really feels that he believes that even if we had 12 definite slots sold, or I'm going to say 10 or 8 or 9 definite slots sold that come to the 28, there'd be people that would be dying to jump in that as horses developed and stuff like that. And we're also looking for the international flair. And one other thing that you said was, yes, we're in between the Breeders' Cup and the Dubai World Cup, but we also took in one last consideration, which we actually are trying to motivate people to run horses more. We know the investment factor of turning a horse into a stallion is so much more than what they can make on the track, and the risk is so high. But we also placed it so that even horses that were going to retire into stud gives them still about 20 days to get ready by the February 15th breeding season. So it was a placement of, okay, how can we get it after the Breeders' Cup, not affect the World Cup, and still have them ready for the breeding season? So even if California Chrome decided to run, you know, on that day, that if he decided to continue a stud career, we wouldn't affect his entire season for breeding. So that's another aspect. And then back to your question, Mike, is that basically, yeah, I mean, we feel confident that all 12 will be sold by the end of August. That's the cutoff deadline. We have the end of June is a $200,000 payment, and then $1 million is due by the end of August. We feel pretty confident all the spots will be sold just by, we know we have 8 or 9 commitments as of now. We know we have another list of about 12 to 15 people on the fence. We think they'll sell. And one of the attractions, like I said, is, first of all, every participant, I believe, gets back $250,000. So right now you're into it for $750,000. And then we believe with the television rights, first year may be a struggle with the sponsorship dollars and the parimutuel hand, the 100% of parimutuel hand, are going back to the shareholders, the commissions, that you'd be close to $400,000 to $500,000 back, regardless of where you finished, and then all the incentives for 1 through 4, 1 through 5, but and then also the incentives for negotiating a spot that you have with somebody that wants to get into the race. So, you know, it's a new creative way of thinking. It's the true revenue sharing model for sure. I mean, because basically, in reality, Mr. Stronach's putting up the track for free for the race. You know, we will get benefits from the undercard, and we will get benefits from the attendance and stuff like that. But it's also a good branding issue. But those are the components of this whole thing.
Tim, what does this do to the Don Handicap, which is normally run the following Saturday, that first weekend in February?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's one of the collateral damages. This kind of absorbs the Don Handicap, because what happens is we're basically, PJ Campbell will apply to reallocate the name of the race to the Pegasus World Cup and make it a grade one just by shifting. So the mile and an eighth distance is the same as the Don was, and the timing is, you know, roughly the same area. So basically the Don Handicap would be absorbed. And that purse money that was earmarked for stake races would go into a program where the horsemen agreed either to put that money into overnights or into smaller stakes throughout the year.
Tim Ritvo, the Chief Operating Officer of the Stronach Group, with us on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Tim, that's on January 28th. Before we get to that point, we still have the middle jewel of the Triple Crown coming up next Saturday at Pimlico. Can't wait to get up there next week. It's always such a special event for us. Tell me a little bit about what we can look forward to next Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Triple Crown, the Preakness has always been the jewel crown of the Stronach Group. I mean, this is it's a spectacular event. It's placed in a tough area, to be honest, from a racing secretary's perspective. You know, a lot of times you get the Derby winner, that's a good thing, but you don't get many others. This year we're fortunate. We're looking at, I'm always conservative, but we're confirmed at 9 or 10 with a bunch of other guys on the fence, so we could really see a good-sized field, highly competitive race. Nyquist, I'm actually a little bit favorable to because of, one, he was sold at the OBS sale at Gulfstream Park. Two, he won the Florida Derby. So, you know, it's always nice when you see people prepping at your tracks, and then being that was purchased at the two-year-old sale there. So obviously that's kind of our rooting interest, and it happened to be the favorite. But the event itself is, it's almost a rite of passage for the kids in the infield. There's never been another state, I have to be honest, that I worked in all the jurisdictions that rolls out the red carpet, that absolutely loves the idea of the Preakness. You know, the Maryland experience, the horse racing, the racing commission, the fans, everybody just loves the Preakness, like you said. It's a true all-around party. You don't get gouged for tickets. Ticket pricing is very reasonable. The experience of a great event, a historic event, second oldest event in America, second oldest sporting event in America. It's just a spectacular time and a fail. So the only thing I got to do is sweat out weather.
Yeah, well, the long-range forecast looks like it's going to be okay. Maybe a bit overcast, but the forecast right now doesn't show any rain for next Friday and Saturday. So let's hope that stays like that and we can have a dry running of the Preakness, unlike a year ago with American Pharoah, where we got hit with that Armageddon right before the race. But it yeah. Should be a great day. We can't wait to get there. Timmy, before we let you go, Maryland Racing always seems to have its fair share of obstacles to overcome, like so many other states. But Maryland in particular recently has had its fair share of obstacles. What does the Preakness and this particular day mean to Maryland Racing?
Well, the Preakness is what carries Maryland Racing, and it will be the cornerstone of what makes healthy year-round racing. Now, the Stronach Group has been lax, and we have made some mistakes in Maryland. We take the first responsibility and credit for where we were wrong. Now we're totally focused and energized in Maryland. We think Florida's in a good, healthy spot. We think California's doing well. And it's Mr. Stronach's mandate that he make Maryland right. So he sent me here to oversee and work this this project. And from a political, from a racing commission standpoint, a legislative standpoint, the horsemen and the breeders, everybody is a driving force and committed to be one as we move forward. Maryland racing will not only be good locally, Maryland racing will be great nationally very soon. It will take time to turn the tide. The subsidies from slots to purses has helped. The RFRA account, which is a subsidies from slots to renovations, has helped. But Maryland racing, it means a lot to us. It's the Triple Crown and the Preakness. Anybody would buy the Preakness and run it for a two-day event, a Fortune 500 company. But the bottom line is, how does that Preakness help Maryland racing be healthy for 150 to 200 racing days a year? That's important. That's what we're working on. And everybody's on board to make that happen. I've never seen a committed crew and cooperation from all factions in racing happening here. I'm excited. Every day I come to work here, there's a passion and a drive to make this thing right, fix the model, and have Maryland racing nationally recognized again.
What are some of the key things to making that possible, Tim?
Well, obviously, just to try to coordinate a coordinated race schedule in the Mid-Atlantic area. We reach out all the time to Philadelphia, Delaware, to all these venues to say, what can we do to have a cooperative race schedule? What can we do to have a cooperative race book? I mean, not to cannibalize each other, not to compete against each other all the time. That's one aspect of it. Two, increase field size. We're running for good money, right? So we continue to utilize the grass course that Mr. Stronach built here at Laurel. It's Lake Gulfstream. It's double the size of what it used to be, 11 feet higher. Basically, people like big fields. They like grass racing. Continue to promote and push that. Continue to increase on the integrity level. Cameras in all the new barns. Upgrade the facilities on the backside for the employees and stuff like that. But the integrity level, constant drug testing, constant situations where running the bad guys out of the game so that the customer feels that he's getting a fair shot when he bets on these horses. So those are the messages we want to continue to send. And there's so many moving parts, and everybody has to do their job. And you, once again, when you talk about horsemen, you see horsemen want to be on a level playing field. They're calling out the cheaters now. We need to level the playing field so that everybody has an equal shot. Those are the things that are very important to give the customer complacency that everything is on the level and they have money to invest in the game from an owner and a gambler, that everything is at the highest level of integrity. Those are things that I think are very important. I see that we as the Stronach Group are moving a lot of market share. The last thing we need to do is take that $10 billion a handle a year and grow it. Just stealing it from other facilities isn't going to get us where we need to go. We need to grow that $10 billion in prime mutual handle, and there's ideas on how to do that.
Tim Ritvo, the Chief Operating Officer of the Stronach Group, kind enough to be with us here this morning on the Equine Forum. Tim, I know it's a busy time for you. We'll let you go. Really do appreciate the visit, and like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll go ahead and get that to you, and we will look forward to seeing you next week at Old Hilltop.
Yeah, Mike, listen, we thank you for having me on, but I thank you for what you do for the industry, too. We know the passion and the love you have for the game. That's what we need. And if we all work together, we can bring this game back to as exciting as it was at one time. So I really appreciate what you do, too.
Yeah, I appreciate it, my friend. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Mike.
Tim Ritvo here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and some interesting things there about their involvement with Maryland racing and the things they're trying to do. But that Pegasus World Cup next January is going to be something spectacular. If it all comes together the way that Tim laid out and the way that they feel like this can come together, it's going to be one heck of a horse race.
Well, it sounds like they've already got a lot of people interested in participation, yeah. So that's cool. Another excuse for us to hang out in Florida during the winter.
We have to go a week earlier now.
Never a bad thing.
I don't know if my liver can take it.
Yeah, well, But
quote I remember hearing from you about a week into this 9-week
extravaganza. 2 days. We drank a half a gallon of rum the first 2 days we were there. I said, this has got to stop.
And somehow we got all of our work done. I don't know how that happened.
Well, we stopped is how we did it. We didn't eliminate it, but we cut way back.
How many letters and spaces? This has got to stop. Oh, yeah. That'd be a great name for a horse.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not, because you don't want the horse to stop.
Yeah, not really a good name for a horse.
Anyways, it is time now for your Blood Horse News update and a look at the top headlines from bloodhorse.com. Yeah, Derby winner Nyquist, he stretched his legs at Pimlico yesterday. He did it in a routine morning gallop. Of course, preparing for next Saturday's Preakness Stakes at Old Hilltop, the undefeated Kentucky Derby winner, who was ridden by exercise rider Johnny Garcia, backtracked with a pony to the top of the first turn before reversing direction and galloping approximately a mile. Pretty cool. You can go to bloodhorse.com to check out the aerial view. They put a drone up above Nyquist, and you can see that video right now at bloodhorse.com. And don't forget to check out Bloodhorse Daily as well and have that delivered to you in a PDF right to your email. You can learn more by going to bloodhorse.com. We're back to visit with Don Little Jr. talking about Unified going in today's Peter Pan. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Justin Phillip, a blue blood sprinter whose first crop had been highly acclaimed at the sales by the exciting young sire First Samurai and a half-brother to three other graded stakes winners, including Algorithms and Grade 1 winning Kentucky Derby prospect Greenpoint Crusader. Justin Phillip made 32 lifetime starts, 23 in graded stakes, with 9 buyer speed figures of 100 or better.
And Justin Phillip will do it! He was a monster in the mud!
And Justin Phillip will prove best in the Count Fleet Sprint.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by 2.
With first crop foals bringing up to $110,000 at the 2015 fall sales, Justin Phillip had a weanling sales average of more than $50,000, and he stands for a value price stud fee of only $5,000. Justin Phillip at Castleton Lions. Are you a believer? Visit CastletonLions.com.
And they're off in New York. The premier stakebred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Lexington's premier printing company is Copy Express. Located at 1255 Eastland Drive, Copy Express offers fast, friendly service for all your printing needs, including high-quality offset printing, digital printing with speedy job delivery, graphic design and pre-press services, plus soft-touch coating, UV coating, binding, and more. Bring your print projects to life with Copy Express. Quality offset printing and digital printing since 1980.
Multiple Grade 1 winner First Samurai by Giant's Causeway got off to a quick start at stud, siring Grade 1 winners in each of his first three crops. His talented son Lee captured the Grade 1 Don Handicap in record time and retired to stud with over $2.3 million in earnings. Sovereign Award nominee Stack Deck captured the Grade 3 Bold Venture Stakes and Grade 2 Kennedy Road Stakes, both just a tick off track record times. First Samurai at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr.
for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March on Chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Unified and King Kranz are a neck apart as they come toward the top of the stretch. Cocked and Loaded is two lengths off of them, and Awesome Gent is fourth. They're into the stretch, and Unified is the leader, getting away a length and a half now. King Kranz is running a game race in second, and then comes Cocked and Loaded. Unified down to the 16th pole, still a length and a half in front of King Kranz, who is second best behind the unbeaten Unified and Jose Ortiz. They have won the Bayshore by three. King Kranz was second, Cocked and Loaded was third, and Awesome Gent was fourth in a final time of 1:22.86.
NBC's voice of the Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup and Old Hilltop Award winner Larry Colmus with the call of Unified. Now a perfect 2-for-2, dominating both races in Florida this year. And he goes this afternoon in the Peter Pan at Belmont. He is, of course, racing in the Centennial Farms colors of Don Little Jr. He's going to join us momentarily. Want to welcome everybody back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington studios, 1 week away from the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. All that coverage coming up next week, beginning Wednesday with the post position draw and a special show which highlights Maryland racing and the Maryland thoroughbred industry. You can check out a complete schedule at horseracingradio.net. And also be sure to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. It has been blowing up today. So many people commenting on the various guests that we've had with Larry Colmus and Tim Ritvo, and now Don Little Jr. with us here on the Equine Forum on HRN. Don, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Jude. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Doing well. How about yourself? How are you holding up on this Peter Pan morning?
Oh, it's just another day. but, you know, I just got back from the barn, and everything is A-OK, and look like we're ready for this afternoon.
What's stood out to you most about Unified in his two starts?
In his first two starts, I think, you know, we liked him as a yearling, Dr. Carr and Paula Parsons, who, you know, for Centennial was always showed that he had some class about him, the way he trained at the farm, and, you know, as soon as Jimmy got him, watch him run, and he scratched sort of the day before the race. Nothing major, but prevented him from starting as a 2-year-old and sort of getting on the Triple Crown trail. And Jimmy always said right after he'd come back to the farm in September for a few months that he could really run. And, you know, Jimmy, the master horseman that he is, you know, yeah, we were pretty confident the way he breezed in Florida at Palmettos before his first start on the 21st of February.
All right, we're going to go ahead and reconnect with Don Little Jr. Obviously, he's in a bit of a bad cell phone area at this point. We'll reconnect with him. We'll come back and continue this interview for you here on the Equine Forum in just a minute. Jude, I want to go back and correct something I said. I mentioned that he had been dominant in his two races at Gulfstream Park earlier this year. He's 2-for-2 as Unified. His first win coming at Gulfstream, that last call you just heard, was in the Grade 3 Bayshore at Aqueduct, and he dominated that race as well. This is a very, very talented son of Candy Ride, and as you heard Don mention there before he was cutting in and out, they were high on him from the very start.
Yeah, well, his first race was just awesome, and then he followed that up with the Bayshore, got a 107 Brisnet speed figure, and, you know, that was going 7/8, and there's a tremendous correlation from 7 furlongs to a mile and an eighth, so, you know, he extrapolates very well in this race.
Don, back with us now here on the Equine Forum. And, Don, apologies. We were kind of cutting in and out there and missed some of what you said about this horse as a yearling and then going through and joining Jimmy and his care with Jimmy Jerkins. Take us through that journey again.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, he was supposed to start in September of his two-year-old year and wrenched an ankle a little bit. And I actually went to dinner with Jimmy the night after he was supposed to run, and talking about horses and Unified, and, you know, so at least we have the idea that Unified can run. And Jimmy's comment was, I know he can run. So, you know, you take Jimmy Jerkins' word for it. And, we watched him train in Florida, and, you know, and Dr. Carr was there with me every morning, and we watched him, and we were pretty excited about his first start and knew he'd run well, but it was kind of a shock, to be honest with you, to everybody. It was like, wow, it looks like this is could be something very special. And then he followed up with a phenomenal effort in the Bayshore. So we were, you know, it was a sort of a perplexing situation what we to do next, and we all had conversations about it, what the options were, and we thought this was a horse that could stretch out. He could train him that way to do so, and a one-turn mile an eighth made the most sense going forward to see how he would handle the extra distance, and everything looks good.
Well, despite the fact that he has blazing speed, he's certainly bred to go farther, and you know, he just seems to have plenty left in the tank at the end of his sprint races.
Yeah.
He looks pretty salty today. And then I read a long time ago that you were kind of thinking about the Travers in the back of your head. Is that still the plan?
Oh, I have, you know, I asked, you know, that's always the goal in the summer when you have a good three-year-old. But other races too before that, between here and in Monmouth and
Don, still in that bad cell phone area, so we'll have to try to get him back here and see if we can't get a better connection with him. You know, obviously talking about Unified, and, you know, he mentioned, you asked him that question about the Travers there, JT, and you're right, I had heard the same rumblings that, you know, okay, he breaks his maiden at the third week of February, you're not going to push him to try to get to the Kentucky Derby, as impressive as he was in that race. So they did the right thing. They took him to the Bayshore, and now they're going to bide their time and make sure they do what's right by the horse. And yeah, the Travers would be a logical goal, you know, for the middle of the summer.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, you're talking even a farther race, a longer race, but it's you know, this is a horse that has a very high ceiling, obviously, and he continues to train well. And Jimmy Jerkins, I mean, the guy's an unbelievable trainer. So,
yeah.
You know, there's lots of things to like about him going forward.
Yeah, of course, this three-year-old son of Candy Ride of a Dixie Union mare. So you mentioned being bred to run longer. He is. He's 4-5 on the morning line for today's Grade 2 Peter Pan. Now, it's a mile and an eighth, but at Belmont Park, because it is such a huge racetrack, that's a one-turn mile and an eighth, so very much an elongated sprint, if you want to look at it like that, JT. But you're talking about the progression going from 7/8 of a mile to a mile and an eighth. Very same thing that Nyquist did this year when he went from 7 furlongs in California, came to the Florida Derby, and won in a mile and an eighth.
Well, the great racing secretary, Jimmy Kilroe, taught me that many moons ago when I was training horses, that a 7/8 race can really tighten a horse up and prepare them for longer distances, and certainly that's the plan here. Jimmy Jerkins is probably every bit as old school as I am, and even more so.
Yeah. You know, you think about the horses that Centennial Farms has been part of over the years, and you go back to 93 in the Belmont Stakes. I can remember sitting in my living room in Massachusetts watching Julie Crone win the Belmont with Colonial Affair in those Centennial colors. Then Corinthian in 2007. That was the first broadcast we ever hosted from Monmouth Park, the 2007 Breeders' Cup, when he just dominated the Breeders' Cup Mile. So they've had some good ones in their time.
Yeah, and they do have the among the best colors in racing. I love the tan and the red. It's so unique. It's a combination you don't often see, and I love those colors.
All right, Don Little Jr. is back with us now, a little better connection. At least that's what we're hoping for. Don, when we lost you, you were just guaranteeing a victory in the Travers later this summer.
Sort of like we're guaranteeing Wicked's victory in the Travers. We don't like to mention that too often. But anyways, you know, to go through this sort of experience and involvement with another, you know, exciting horse in almost back-to-back years, one after the next. You know, Wicked retires and here comes the Unified. It's a tribute to the team, everybody involved, from the guys at the farm, how Dr. Carr and Paul picked the horses out with everybody. And most of all, the partners, you know, to support the cause and put up the money and enjoy this sport, and you know, especially to be involved at a level that we're able to compete at, and it's really, really a neat feeling.
You have a long history of campaigning top horses, so it should be relatively easy to convince people to invest in Centennial, but I know it's never easy to get partners, and you ask somebody to buy a racehorse, you know, you kind of got to wonder, are they going to be crazy enough to do that? But you guys seem to come up with the best ones on a regular basis, and that's a real feather in your cap.
Well, I appreciate that, and again, it's a team effort. We've been together for 33 years. It's the same team in terms of the purchasing of the horses and the way the farm runs in Virginia, and you know, to have Jimmy and his stellar crew on board now for, gosh, I think it's almost 10 years now. It's been a great journey, and we look forward to having many more years together. And I think we've got some exciting 2-year-olds, and there's a couple 3-year-olds that I think are going to step up in short order too.
Don Little Jr. with us here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don, when you look back through the history of Centennial Farms and you see names like Colonial Affair and Corinthian and King Cougat, and you mentioned Wicked Strong more recently, last year, the winner of the Wood Memorial, what's the key to all of this success? You mentioned it being a team effort, but what's the approach that you take when you're selecting these horses?
I sort of sit down and talk to Steve and Paul, and we all do, and, you know, everybody has their own opinion on horses, and, I can't give you a specific, to be honest with you. I think we're all horse people. We grew up around horses. You know, the way they look, the way they present themselves, you know, it's like any professional athlete when you're at a combine or something, you know, they don't all work out, but you got to start with the basics that catches your eye. You know, individuals have to catch your eye. You know, you can be walking through a baseball park of 6 or 7 games going on, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of your eye, you see a kid that they go, boy, that guy's going to be an all-star. And I mean, that's sort of how we do it. We look at a lot of horses. We want to have a pedigree that suggests a classic type horse, and you know, it's. I think the fact that the people involved have been horse people right from the get-go.
Tell me about the first time you saw Unified.
Well, the first time I saw Unified was after Steve and Paul. You know, Steve and Paul go and look at all the horses first, and they put a keeper list together that we all go through after the fact. And you know, I think that year, I think they had only 2 or 3 horses on the list for us to go look at as together. And, from my perspective, I don't know Steve's particular, but when he gives me a keeper list and I go look at it, and the first thing I kind of look at is how the horse stands there and looks at things. You know, looks around and sees his surroundings, and if you know, his head goes up and gives you that attitude, well, it's, you know, I'm the boss. because you know, they are herd animals and they have to be a dominant presence to lead the pack, if you will. And you know, the look in the eye, the look of eagles, as I call it, and my dad used to call it. You know, it's something that I can't really explain, but they got to, like anything, they got to have a good athletic look and athletic walk and decent pedigree to back it up. You can have a phenomenal athlete, but if they don't have a pedigree, you know, because our ultimate goal is to come up with placing a stallion at a major stallion farm, and in order to do that, you got to have a good pedigree for the breeders to be attracted and support that horse as a stallion as well. And I think if you look at, as you mentioned before, Centennial's past history, we've placed since 1982, we've placed 13 stallions at major stallion stations throughout the world.
Wow. Big number.
So it's a good number.
Yeah, it's a big number. How often, Don, will you go back and watch, say, Colonial Affair winning the Belmont in 93 or Corinthian winning the Dirt Mile? Do you ever pop in a video and watch those?
Yeah, I even go back and watch Aptostar and Topicon come first and second in the Acorn. So back when Alan had those horses, Jimmy's dad, and that's when it all started. Of course, we love to go back and live those memories. And, you know, the Rubiano races were kind of fun, too, because he was always... The reason we have the box at Belmont on the finish line is because my father kept bugging the people at Horseman's Relations because he'd always win his races by a nose. And he couldn't. He wanted to be on the finish line, and some of those races were really exciting. But, yeah, there's been some great times. I mean, the Lil's Lad, you know, we had 25% of him. We had King Cougat, like you said, Signal Tap. Just, you know, the list goes on, and it's fun to go back. I have a tape of all the, you know, stakes horses and stallions that we had, you know, sort of a highlight tape, and it's fun to put in and watch them all.
Yeah, it's especially fun when you're in a little bit of a slump. It's a good reminder that you know what you're doing.
That's exactly when it's best of you. It's exactly right. You know, you don't want to change it. It's cyclical like many things in life, and you can't get discouraged during down times. You know, if you stick to your game plan. I've always been a believer in loyalty, and you know, once a plan works, you don't have to deviate from the path too much to get it back online. Where if you deviate off that path too much, when it is, you know, a falling off the rails, you really get in trouble. So you just got to tweak a few things a little bit and stick to your guns, and it'll come back. And looks like we're right down the middle right now. We couldn't be more centered if we tried. It's been a great, great success.
Well, Don, you mentioned your dad, and he, of course, is no longer with us. What do you think your dad would say or think about all the success that you're having now in the direction that you're going here with Centennial?
Well, I would think and hope he would think that he you know, mentored us all very, very well, which he did, and be proud of the legacy that he's left. And you know, it's an honor to carry those tan and red silks, like you said, you know, carry on. And it's, again, to keep everybody sort of intact the way we have. And it just makes it that much more enjoyable and fun to be around the people that we have involved with us. You know, again, and the partners don't get enough credit. You know, if it wasn't for them coming up with the capital to attend the sales and buy the type of horses we have, and you know, it's been a joy working with them and everybody involved.
Well, here's to hoping you continue to build on that Centennial legacy later this afternoon in the Peter Pan with Unified. All the best, Don. Always great to catch up, and go get it done later today.
Okay, well, thank you, and we'll need that little luck. We always do, and it's always a pleasure being on the show with you guys, and look forward to seeing you.
All right, good luck today. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Don Little Jr., Centennial Farms on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests who appears on the program, we're going to send him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We tell you every week that you can embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. You want to make sure that you do that because the products are absolutely sensational. Unified, very, very talented. Going to be fun to see him run today. The question, the distance, will he handle it? The first time stretching out, but as you said, Jude, 7/8 of a mile, 7 furlongs to 1 1/8 today, should hit him right between the eyes.
Yeah, no, I kind of fancy him today in there. I think, you know, he's going to be the heavy favorite. We actually didn't put out a Pope Jude sheet this week because the weather's was questionable. The races are kind of chalky in New York and all over the place. The weather's going to have an effect. So we'll just gather ourselves and wait for Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Day. But you know, it's unfortunate that the weather screwed up the card a little bit at Belmont Park because it's a really good card today.
Visit our website for podcasts of all of our programs, including this Equine Forum, our Tuesday night Jock Talk program. Wednesday nights, it's Trainer Talk. On Thursdays, the call-in show presented by BrisNet.com. And on Fridays, you can catch the ExpressBet.com weekend stakes preview, where we take a look at all the big races coming up. And that show available for you right now with Ellis Starr and Anthony Stabile. They brought you that program live last night. It's archived on the site now. They took a look at all the big races, including the Peter Pan. Make sure you go back and take a listen at horseracingradio.net. And follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, edging ever closer to 10,000 followers. Maybe we'll do like a mission 10,000 type of thing.
Mission 10,000?
What do you think?
What would that entail?
Trying to get to 10,000 followers. That would be kind of cool.
Oh, well, we need to offer something.
I'm offering us. I mean, come on, brother. What more could you want?
I'm sure people could want a hell of a lot more than us.
Yeah, we've just lost 50 followers in the last 10 seconds.
Yeah.
We're going to get to a break. We'll come back and take a look at some of the big races coming up. We'll do that next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir. Hello, boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Roger.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Roger.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's.
Come in. Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Grade 1 millionaire Cowboy Cow is leading the third crop sire by two-year-old winners with a dozen juvenile winners already this year. His runners have earned nearly $2 million, and his sire is a greater percentage of winners than nearly any other stallion in his crop, including Pioneer of the Nile. Cowboy Cow, a grand-looking son of Giant's Causeway, standing at Pen Oak Stud.
Racing fans, Ken Nyquist follow up on his big win in the Kentucky Derby with another Triple Crown victory in the Preakness Stakes next Saturday. Come join the fun and watch the Preakness right here at the Great Race Place. Make your Preakness reservations now at SantaAnita.com or call 626-574-RACE. Free general admission and parking are available in the infield via Gate 6 off of Colorado Place. First post time is at 2 p.m. Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Kirkwood Stables has a long and storied history of producing and selling winners at the highest level.
Alphabet Soup has scored a shocking upset.
And Memories of Silver draws clear.
Soaring softly, the queen of the American green.
Glenn Pretty holds on to the oaks.
It is Winter Memories, victorious again.
Visit this year's Kirkwood consignments at the upcoming OBS March and April sales. Kirkwood Stables, proven success. Learn more at KirkwoodStables.com.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
At the eighth pole, quick peek there by Velasquez over his shoulder. And he says, it's finished. Final furlong. Look at Stradivari. Hasn't been asked for a thing and just has a cakewalk here in Keeneland's second race. Long way back to that battle for second. That is where Pinson rallied up from the outside to grab the second spot, followed closely across the line by Siding Spring, who was toward the inside, and also No Distortion. It'll be a photo for show between that pair.
The footnote in the past performances next to Stradivari's latest win at Keeneland says, took over at will. And listening to Kurt Becker's call, you could tell this was as easy a win as you're going to see in thoroughbred racing. The margin by Stradivari in that allowance win, 14 lengths. His previous win in his maiden effort at Gulfstream Park, 11 lengths. Think about this horse and how good he is. Hasn't really been challenged yet, and at least in his last two starts he hasn't. Jude, he's going to be somewhat of a wild card and a buzz horse next week in the Preakness.
Well, you know, when you hear Kurt Becker discuss a cakewalk, here's a guy that frequents every fair in Illinois showing antique glass and trying to beat up on the Sinclair sisters and their collection. So he knows a thing or two about cakewalks, being a fair guy. I mean, Stradivari, now granted, I mean, he beat Pinson, you know, not exactly a household name.
Yeah, but he did it by 14 lengths.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to run against horses that you don't think are near your level, you better beat them by 14 lengths. That's what he did.
Well, but here's an interesting thing that I find it interesting, and you may too, and our listeners as well.
Let's hope.
Brisnet has
tell me something interesting.
Brisnet has prime power numbers on
correct
on their past performances,
right,
and a lot of people use those as a handicapping tool, and it's a formula that Brisnet has developed over the years. Do you know where Stradivari ranks in the most recent edition of their PPs? In the prime power?
15.
Oh, you looked. 15th.
Yeah.
That's close. Not even in the top 12.
No.
I'm being clear. 15th. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make out of that. I don't know if that's good, bad, or otherwise. I mean, he looks okay on paper, right? His speed figures have improved. He's gotten better as he goes along.
He's a wild card.
Could he be subject to a bounce, possibly? He ran a top off a layoff. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, we don't know how good Stradivari is. He has not been tested. He's going to make his stakes debut in the Preakness Stakes next Saturday. But again, he's been so dominant in his last two efforts. I think those efforts leading trainer Todd Pletcher to say, okay, you know what? Let's give him a shot. Let's test him. Now, he does have a pedigree that says, okay, this mile and 3/16 will be okay because he's a son of Medaglia d'Oro, who you remember was eighth in the 2002 running of the Preakness, came back and won the Travers at a mile and a quarter later that summer. Medaglia d'Oro, also the sire of 2009 Preakness heroine Rachel Alexandra, who, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the last horse not to run in the Derby and win the Preakness. So there's some tie-ins there. The thing that I found interesting about the connections is that here's Todd Pletcher, who seems to win every big race under the sun, and here's John Velasquez, Hall of Fame rider, who seems like he has won every single race that there is to win. Neither of those individuals has ever won the Preakness.
Yeah, so that's a big question mark. The other thing is, how far would Nyquist beat Pinson by?
More than 14 lengths?
Probably. Just saying.
All right, we'll see if Nyquist can take the next step toward racing's Triple Crown. It would be only the second time in history we've ever had back-to-back Triple Crown winners in the sport, 77 and 78, with Seattle Slew and Affirm, the only time it's ever happened.
I'm sorry to say I was alive at the time.
I was too. Not as old as you, but I was alive. All right, our thanks to our special guests here today, Larry Colmus, for being with us in the first half of the show, Tim Ripbo from Gulfstream and the Stronach Group, Don Little Jr. just a short time ago as well. If you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast there, and be sure to join us starting on Wednesday for all of our Preakness coverage. For Sean C. with our social media, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.